Hello, everyone. Welcome to this edition of Stall 7, UltiWorlds AUDL Podcast. I am Chris McGlynn. He is Alex Rubin. Big show today because we have a lot to talk about. We're, of course, going to lead off with the Raleigh Rally, is what I'm calling it here, which was an unbelievable comeback in the fourth quarter to knock off the Atlanta Hustle. Also, a couple games from New York this weekend. Boston eliminated from the playoffs. We'll talk more about that in a little bit. A game that got postponed. A little bit of controversy around the postponement now, as we're seeing unfold on Twitter. Some other games out west as well. And Minnesota clinching its playoff position at this stage. Plus, we're going to have Theo Juan of Hucking A join us to talk about the Canada Cup. We had another big weekend of results there up north of the border. So he will be joining us in a little bit. Alex, let's dive in, though, to this game, because this was just outrageous. It kind of looked like Atlanta was going to run away with it. They are a very difficult team to come back against because of that zone, and yet Raleigh outscores them 6-1 in the fourth quarter to take a 20-18 victory.
Yeah, I mean, Atlanta really had control over most of this game. It was windy, it was raining, there was quite a few execution errors that I think sort of added to the variance of the game and led to a lot of turnovers that might not have existed in cleaner conditions, right? I wonder if it's not raining, you know, if maybe Atlanta has an easier time holding out. It didn't seem like there were too many, the defense didn't force too many blocks as much as like they happened. There was the one, Henry Fisher had a fantastic recovery on a deep shot that earned a key block back for Raleigh. But yeah, at the end of the game, they score the last 5 points. That's really crazy way to keep their head there. There was the one play where Noah Saul was running like a give and go. I don't think it was at the end. I think it was like earlier in the second quarter. And they just kind of like popped up and like he just reached like backwards between two defenders, caught it and threw it for a goal with like less than 10 seconds left. It was like those kind of little plays that won the game for Raleigh.
Right, but so I viewed that. I'm going to talk about this play specifically for a second. That to me, it seemed like, oh, cool, Raleigh got the break, actually, that because they had, it was bad turnover by Tanner Robinson, just a drop straight, stone cold drop through his hands. And then Saul makes the ridiculous play, tosses into the end zone to David Richardson for the goal. 8 seconds left in the half, and it seemed like, cool, Raleigh just broke. They had been trailing by a significant margin most of the second quarter. That made it 11-9 in favor of the Hustle. Well, then Atlanta scored with only 8 seconds.
Oh, yeah.
And took a 12-9 lead into the half.
Honestly, a really good play design. I don't know if it was on purpose or not, but they threw it to like the front of the end zone and had Holzmeier rise up and like tap it to the back of the end zone.
Yeah, it got tipped a little bit. I think it was Jaime caught it. I think basically him and Polk caught it together, but Jaime gets credited with the goal. And I'm actually going to push back a little bit. I think the rain probably helped Atlanta build the lead in the first place. Raleigh was dropping stuff left and right. They were trying to throw flicks that went to nobody because they slipped out. I mean, Noah Saul, as great of a player as he is, I remember there was one that got the turn. Saul picked it up, turned it, and threw it right into the turf, probably 20 feet away, the first throw after the turnover. And that was unfortunate for Raleigh, but they had tons of unforced errors, and just overall, they didn't seem to be, I don't know what it was, they just weren't hitting on all cylinders. Then all of a sudden in the fourth quarter, Raleigh turned it on and Atlanta collapsed.
Yeah,
I mean, this was 28-3 Falcons in the Super Bowl collapsed. I know it's not quite the same stakes and it was really only a 3-point game, but they led 18-15.
Over the span of 2 weeks, Atlanta's dropped from the 1 seed to the 4 seed in the Atlantic Division.
Okay, if this was the championship game, I'd say it was somewhat close to the same stakes. We're talking about the Super Bowl here. It's kind of a big deal.
So here's a real question. Well,
I know you Patriots fans are just desensitized to all your Super Bowl wins at this point. But
I was going to say, as a Patriots fan, let me go for the coaching decision at the end of the game. We'll bring back the not giving it to Marshawn Lynch, maybe is the analogy here. But there's 2 minutes left of the game. Raleigh has the disc. I think they had called a timeout to sub on their offense after getting the turnover. They're up by one. They're up 19-18. And Atlanta throws out their zone. And Raleigh just bleeds the clock. Easy passes. They don't mind if they go backwards. It didn't seem like Atlanta was putting too much pressure on Raleigh to get the turnover that they needed. Raleigh ended up getting through and scoring with 20-something seconds left to give themselves the insurance goal. But if you're Miranda Roth-Knowles there coaching the Hustle, wouldn't you want to put some an aggressive double team, put on, like, you know, try to force a turnover instead of trying to eat the clock, which is what zones normally do.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. That's actually what Raleigh did for a good chunk of the second half, especially the fourth quarter. They tried a lot of those out-of-bounds pull plays where they would trap them on the sidelines and play lockdown defense. They didn't even always double-team, but they put Atlanta in some really tough positions, and they forced a lot of turnovers that way. I mean, we saw a couple shots downfield that were overthrown. We saw a couple of backfield throws that just hung up there and were knocked down by Raleigh defenders. I'm going to shout out Ethan Bloodworth, I thought, played a really, really good game. He has been one of the best, I think, underrated defenders in the league this year. I was super impressed. When he was on Austin Taylor became essentially a non-factor for the Atlanta offense, which was incredibly impressive because he had a really great game up to that point. I actually want to talk about one other strategic decision here with you.
Yeah.
With 23 seconds left, Raleigh is swinging the disc around, and they end up actually throwing it into the end zone for the goal. They score that goal to go up 20-18 with 23 seconds left. Did they not learn anything from what happened against New York? There was a little bit more time on the clock. There was a little more time on the clock with the New York thing, but like, just run out the clock there. I mean, we saw New York score two goals in under 30 seconds to beat to force overtime against – or to – yeah, force double overtime
force
against
double
them.
Time, right.
Just the week before. What are you doing messing around there? Just run out the clock. That's like the – you know, in football, you dribble it out. You know, in basketball, you sit on it, right? You take the knee right before the end zone. You run out the clock. As soon as you give the disc back to Atlanta is when they have a chance. Now, they didn't do anything with it. They hucked it right to the end zone. Jacob Fairfax came down with it. But, I mean, that was a bit interesting to me, not to see them just run out the clock right then and there.
Yeah, I don't mind it. I mean, you throw the open person.
Either.
If
Obviously,
the open person's
works.
In the end zone, you score. You're up by two with 20 seconds left. I you know, their win percentage against New York was 99% at that point. Their win percentage here was also 99%. I'll take 99%. I'd rather, like, in a game like this where there is some funky circumstances, I'd rather take completions if we happen
That's
to
true.
Score. We happen
true.
To score.
Very wet conditions,
and their defense
so.
Have been playing lights out. Atlanta didn't score in the last 9 minutes of the game. You think they're going to score in 20 seconds?
I think, if I remember correctly, I saw from, I think, Daniel Cohen on Twitter, Atlanta scored two goals in the final 17 minutes of gameplay.
That's
just outrageous.
Because their last score, they scored with, 5 minutes left in the third quarter, only twice since then. Raleigh had a series of breaks in between each one. I want to give a shout out to Elijah Long.
Great game. I know he made the honor roll this week.
30 of 30 on a day with there was, you know, a weather delay. Like, it wasn't even like just normal rain. Like, it was pretty bad. Played almost equal points on the offense and defense, and it seemed like a pretty solid anchor against that zone. Just really found good spaces to attack. I think Raleigh definitely like attacked through the zone, and past games we saw them try to go a little softer around it. A lot of like handler movement. They were much more direct in this game, and I think Long was a big part of that.
Definitely. He played fantastic. I mean, overall, Raleigh is just so deep. They have so many capable playmakers overall. Right now, Atlanta, fourth in the Atlantic Division. That's got to be a concern because you just went from being, okay, you're probably the number one seed heading into the playoffs to you're almost definitely going on the road now for your playoff game. You got one game left against
right,
Pittsburgh.
They'll beat Pittsburgh.
Very winnable.
So they're going to be
9-3. Right, but
and
if
then,
DC, I don't know what we're going to get into the DC situation in a few minutes here.
Oh,
but,
DC also has to play Raleigh, which, you know, Raleigh
right,
could win that one.
One of those two teams.
DC could
right,
have
but
three.
But if New York wins out.
Right.
I don't know. It's going to be complicated. And
no,
I think,
Atlanta is no longer in control of their own future here.
Yeah, they need some help here. And I just, it goes back to last week, you know, really, really, really costly game to give up. I don't think that had any impact on the result from this week, but my goodness, last week that loss to Tampa Bay is going to haunt them. It's absolutely going to haunt them.
And you know, the other thing quickly for Atlanta here, looking at home field, it's not just you play a home game, it's easier travel, it's you get your fans there, it's a little more hype. We've known John Stubbs is only playing home games. Is he going to play
right
on
now.
A road playoff game? And maybe you convince him to for the continuity's sake, and you know, they're obviously, a lot of them are playing club together, but.
Or just call up Dylan Tanell again.
Just sure.
Hey man, We're going to play in New York for the weekend. You want to come down and play with us again? So who knows? I think, but it is interesting to see what happens to Atlanta now, because this was, they were riding high, and now, I mean, they're still really good. They're going to make the playoffs, and they have every chance of making it through to championship weekend. I just think their road to getting there is going to be much tougher at this stage. All right, let's move into the rest of the Atlantic Division now, because a couple other results that we need to talk about from this weekend. New York played Philadelphia on Friday night, and this was not the typical New York performance that we have come to expect. They were definitely not at full strength. Ryan Ozgar, Marquez Brownlee, Josue Aloro, all not playing. But outside of a second quarter where they outscored the Phoenix 10-5, the Empire were outscored in every single quarter of the game. This is, I don't know what happened here. I mean, this is a Philadelphia Phoenix team we've seen get blown out by DC, by Boston, by Atlanta, by Raleigh. I mean, every other team in the division is blowing them out. And for some reason, New York's playing them to a one-goal finish. 20-19 was the final score of this game.
Look, I mean, we know that New York doesn't usually blow teams out. It's not really their style defensively. They're
Right.
not as aggressive there. And after what we're talking midway through the second quarter, so or even early second quarter, they're up 7-5. They end up going up 9-5 between like 7 and 4 minutes left in the second quarter. They were in control of the game, right? Philadelphia never had a lead, was never within one until there was 5 minutes left in the fourth quarter, and then they, everyone held out from there. I don't know that I'd be too worried about New York here. Obviously, you'd like to win this game by a little bit more. Hopefully, people didn't lose too much money on DraftKings here, but I imagine the line was more than a pick'em for this
It
game.
was by quite a lot.
But
It was New York -7. So
oh wow, okay.
Charlie, Keith, and I all hammered. We were like, pick the Phoenix. Don't they're not gonna win by more than 7 goals in this game. And I didn't expect
Yeah.
them to win by more than 7 goals. But obviously I didn't pick that, but you would have thought not a one goal game. I mean, you're talking about, oh, they only pulled within one. That means that New York played out the final 5 minutes of the game up by only a single point for a good chunk of it. I mean, you're like trading back and forth. I mean, yes, they're in control, and but
But
like
I think they're
this is a
okay with
game they
that.
should have won by like 4 or 5. And I
Yeah,
get
but
that you're okay with that, but this was just like, where was the urgency? Where was the, it just didn't seem like they were super sharp in this one. And now obviously it didn't matter because they turned around and beat Pittsburgh the next day by 4. And so, clearly they didn't let anything that bothered them, in terms of execution and stuff like that come back to haunt them the next day. I mean, New York didn't have a break. I don't think outside of the, no, they had one break in the third quarter, did not have a break in the fourth quarter. They had one second half break. They didn't have that. Their only breaks came in the second or third quarter. That
yeah.
just to me is like a little bit of a concern there. I don't think it's like, oh my God, we need the panic button. They still won the game. They're still in control here, but
They
they just
actually
didn't
clinched a
look.
playoff spot with that win.
They did. They did. They eliminated Boston despite the fact that Boston won. So let's actually talk about those Boston Glory, because this is another one where we said hammer the Boston Glory on this one. I was all over this one this week. Boston was a 4.5 point favorite against the Thunderbirds. They beat them by 8 in Pittsburgh earlier this year. So I was like, please take Boston. Please take Boston. They ended up winning this by 6. 20-6-20 is the final score here. And Pittsburgh just continues to look completely outmatched. They have very little defensive resistance to offer to pretty much any team in the league. And Boston finally pretty close to full strength. Orion Cable is there, Tanner Johnson's there, Ben Sadok, Ian Engler, Henry Babcock, all those top offensive players finally all out in the field together and looking good doing it. Unfortunately,
They didn't
Boston.
need to. I mean, they went up 5-1 in the
Right, and
first,
that helps.
that was the bulk of the first quarter.
Yeah, that helps quite a bit to get out to that early lead. But we saw them do that against Raleigh the week before, and they blew that game in the
Fair
end.
enough.
They ended
Fair
up, they
enough.
went up 6-3 or whatever it was after the first quarter and ended up getting beaten by just a single point. Now Raleigh is obviously a much
I
better
was going to
team than the
say a
Pittsburgh
bit of
Thunderbirds
a
are.
difference there. Although half the Thunderbirds are from Raleigh when they were good
That's
in
true. That's
that game
true.
in Raleigh.
But for Boston, this is the game, like this is a season of, what if? What if they had hung on against Atlanta when they played in week two? What if they hadn't lost to the Philadelphia Phoenix in a shocking upset in Boston, probably midpoint of the season? I mean, if those, even you win one of those two games, you're still alive for the playoffs right now, heading into the final weekend where you've got to play against New York twice, theoretically. We don't know what the status exactly is of that second New York matchup. But all the same, Boston, I think they're going to be a factor in the AUDL playoff situation going forward. For an expansion team, I think this is probably about what you would have expected. A couple of losses, kind of getting their feet under them as they figure it all out. And I know that the season's not over. They've got something left to play for here. You know that Boston's going to be gunning for New York, right? Like, this is going to be they want to knock off New York
so
badly.
Those two games, I think, are going to matter for the playoff seeding. I imagine New York will be favored in both, but it will certainly
it
be fun to watch. No, definitely
not. I'm thinking right now, maybe a point and a half, maybe 2.5 points in favor of the Empire. The Empire are at home for this first game, at the very least. So
I'd probably put it at 2.5. But that's why I don't set the lines. Thank you, DraftKings.
We used to. Yeah, it's good old days. Yeah,
good old days. 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's talk about this DC-Tampa Bay game, because this game was postponed, and there was a lot of interesting communication here. So this game is supposed to be played Sunday. Supposed to be played Saturday, excuse me.
Yep.
Late Friday night, the Tampa Bay Canons put out a kind of like statement on Twitter saying the game has been moved earlier in the day. They're trying to avoid any conflicts with Tropical Storm Fred, which was moving into the area. So they were trying to make sure that they gave themselves as much leeway as possible, move the game up to 5 o'clock. That was put out then. Well, then Saturday morning, all of a sudden, we hear that the game has been postponed for weather purposes, which, you know, at that point, made sense.
I think
sense,
we heard
right?
that we kinda, from the DC Breeze account.
Yes. The Breeze then put out a statement saying the game had been postponed. So it was like, okay, that makes sense. Like, totally understand that. You know, we totally get that. Well, then we had an interesting chain of events happen on Monday evening. Coach Andrew Rocha, who we had on the show just last week, it was announced that he was retiring as the head coach of the Tampa Bay Cannons after, I think, 4 or 5 years with the team.
I think it was 4 years. I think 2018 was his first year.
That sounds about right. So tons of work that he's put in to the team. We wish him the best in whatever he decides to do next. And seemed like, okay, I don't know. You know, they should theoretically have to like, reschedule this game, but we weren't really sure what the deal was. Anyway, so it sounds like Rocha is unable to make any of the kind of rescheduled weekends to be able to participate and coach the team. So they basically are just saying, all right, well, we're not going to sit on this any longer. Rocha is retiring from being the coach, and a good run that he had. Definitely going to, he will be a missed figure in the AUDL. Now, Charlie, if you're listening to this, call up Rocha right now. Get him involved in our AUDL coverage for next year. If Andrew Rocha is a color commentator somewhere in the AUDL, I will tune in probably every single week.
It will be colorful, that's for sure.
Colorful and then some.
Yeah.
Now, this is where things start to get really interesting, because then Rocha goes on a rant on Twitter about how Tampa Bay actually wanted to play the game and this game was not canceled due to weather, and that it actually had a lot to do with the Breeze having hesitancy to travel to Florida due to COVID-19 concerns. Now, none of that was in the statement, and nothing from the league has indicated that is the case, but Rocha has been pretty adamant that the league is kind of letting the Breeze get away with this, and that now they're being asked if the Tampa Bay wants to travel up to D.C. to try and play the game, and whether or not Tampa can try and host, and now the season was supposed to be over, so players have different commitments the weekends after this, so they can't make it. Rocha put out a plea for, hey, you want to be a Cannons player for a day in an absolutely meaningless game? I mean, it's definitely... It's not a
meaningless game for DC. DC's in first place. They need to win to keep that standing. Right.
And which, Alex, imagine, by the way, what are you doing next weekend? Any chance, or in 2 weeks, you want to travel down to Florida and go play against the DC Breeze?
It would be pretty fun, actually. I could be convinced.
Yeah, I could too, if somebody pays for my flight.
I don't know if that's a conflict of interest here. We'll have to clear it with the Ulti Road Ethics Committee.
Probably. For one game, come on, it'd be fun. Game doesn't matter for Tampa. We'll just go out there, do our best, try and beat DC, or just hang out with Daryl on the sidelines.
Don't get me wrong. I've been holding back this club season, but if you put me on a team where it's like, yeah, if you want to huck it, just huck it. It doesn't matter if anyone's there or not. Just do it. I would love that.
That is actually, the Cannons have kind of moved away from that, but that is still,
I think somewhere deep down
Bobby
in their
Lay,
DNA.
I did a I was looking actually at the current season like stat leaders. I was curious entering the last week of the season. Bobby Lay currently is first in assists.
He's third in assists per game, yeah.
But first in total assists, so he wants to play.
Assists.
I bet keep that. You know, he has a one assist lead over Pavel. So looking for that 55 assist day for you, Pavel, to make my bold prediction.
Ask. How's that 100 assist season coming for Pavel?
It's not quite there yet, but had he played for the Cannons, maybe.
Had he played for the Cannons, he would have had way worse receivers than he does right now in Chicago.
That's true, but he would have been thrown to the end zone a lot more. Anyway, he would have been playing a lot more too on the O-line.
Good point. That is definitely accurate. So we're waiting to hear more about this situation. Alex has reached out to the Breeze and league office. We've not heard anything confirmed. And we obviously don't want to report anything that we cannot confirm at this point and do not know to be true. But we are mostly just reading from what Coach Rocha's Twitter thread is. You are more than welcome to go do the same. And if you really want to get into all of the nitty-gritty details of this, I expect we'll hear more about this in the coming weeks. I don't know how quickly the league is going to move on this. I don't know how quickly the information is going to be publicly available. We've seen the league definitely likes to keep things in-house. They're not super big on kind of always putting the information out there and putting the fire out. Although, I mean, neither is USA Ultimate, but that's a different story. We don't need to get into that.
Wow, yeah. Sure, DeepLick will cover that story, but I was at SFI West last weekend. Fun times.
Maybe that'll be
public
just subscriber only.
Dallas Public Enemy living up to their name. Okay.
Yes, definitely. All right, let's move out west, actually. This works out nicely here. We got two games here between two West Division teams. And San Diego, this one does matter just a little bit because they hang on. They win by 4 against the Aviators, 20-16 in the final. And they clinch home field advantage now in the playoffs for that West Division playoff game against the Dallas Roughnecks. And good for them. You know, they needed to take care of business here. They beat LA once again and unfortunately put to bed any hopes for the Roughnecks of them hosting their playoff game. But
good for them.
Say,
LA, like, I think like 5 or 6 of their players had played at Select Play Invite earlier on Saturday.
Wow.
And then played in the AUDL game, and then that's why they got 4 blocks, all D-line players. Like,
I
talked to the players. It was like unclear if they were like, you know, strongly encouraged to come to the Aviators game. Like, take care of your bodies, y'all. If you're playing a club tournament, like, and you feel like you can play an AUDL game later that day, great, go for it. But like, we've all been off for, you know, most of like almost 2 years at this point. We're just getting back into playing shape. Like, if you're at AD there, like, it's not worth hurting yourself.
Well, especially
luckily none of them did.
For.
I'm not saying that. Yeah,
right,
exactly.
Right. They don't
it's pride
for there.
Beating San Diego. And honestly, credit to the Aviators. Last night was LA Astro Night at the Aviators games. I was supporting the local WUL team.
Oh, very nice.
Love to see that kind of connection. And I think that probably was part of why there was like encouraged attendance. And good for the players for showing up for their semi-pro counterparts. And I'm excited to see the Astra and the rest of the WL play at the Winter Cup later this season.
That's
later
something you
next
could only
season,
do in California, the Winter Cup for Ultimate. Of PUL and, you know, women's semi-pro counterparts, Raleigh had a big weekend too. The Raleigh Radiance winning the PUL East tournament, which I will say I did not see coming at all. Fully expected either New York or DC to win that because Raleigh was down a number of key playmakers, a couple due to injury, a couple due to, you know, players not coming back. And a lot more depth to that Raleigh scene than I think we realize even.
Great.
Just unbelievable.
Really, it was really fun. We watched the one of the Radiance games, I'm totally blanking. I think it was against Gridlock, right? That was like the close one, right?
Yes.
Yeah. We watched that game on Saturday night with my club team in the hotel room. That was a lot of fun too.
Very nice. Very nice. It was a fun weekend. It's good to see Women's Pro Ultimate back out there. Speaking of playing for pride, which is what you were talking about earlier with these LA Aviators getting out on the field, San Jose and Seattle basically just playing for pride. Loser would clinch last place in this one, and that's exactly what happened to Seattle here, unfortunately, for them. San Jose picking up a solid 4-point win. Unfortunately for me, not covering because they were 4.5-point favorites. So Seattle got in there with the hook, but Yeah. Still, solid hey. Performance by the Spiders, and you know they avoid finishing in last place. Still, probably not the season we would have expected from this team.
No, I mean, look, I think once Seattle was like officially eliminated, I don't think their older player, like, you know, Mark Burton and Adam Simon and Ben Stallone, I don't think they played in a single other game. The youth movement alive and strong in Seattle. Like, there are players who like are playing at YCCs in 2019 who are getting like big minutes for this Seattle team. Who, you know, you might not know their names if you're one of those like East Coast biased kind of people who's like, oh, look at all the youth in Raleigh. But like, Seattle is going to be a problem for teams in a few years. Like, they're really building something there.
Seattle's probably they're a problem for teams now. I mean, they
might not have beat Dallas.
Season. They beat Dallas earlier this year. And they've had some solid games. The other thing too is Seattle's been absolutely atrocious on the road this season. They got to figure that out. I don't think they've won a single road game this year. So maybe time for the Cascades to get their act together on the road. It's been a long time coming. They have one of the worst travel roster situations in the league. I don't know what the solution is there, but something
they should merge with the Cannons for road games. Maybe they'd put together a competitive roster.
Oh yeah, because you know Tampa Bay and Seattle are so close together.
Oh no, they're flying in players. And you know, it's they shouldn't actually do that. They're the two farthest teams away from each other in the league,
quite literally. Yes.
But they both have similar problems.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. All right, let's go to the Central Division here, because Minnesota, this one did matter for them. They beat Detroit and Indianapolis, lock up their playoff spot. And Detroit, you know, not really a whole lot we have to talk about there. Minnesota wins pretty comfortably. The Indianapolis game, oh my goodness. I feel so bad for Akshat Rajan, who's a friend of the show and noted better of many sporting events, but getting into AUDL betting this past weekend, he had a 5-team parlay going. This is now Welcome to Bad Beats, Stall 7 edition. He had a 5-team parlay going this weekend, hit the first 4 legs of the parlay, needed Indy to lose by 3 or less. It was, you know, they had +3.5 in favor of the Alley Cats here. And Indy, with seconds left in the game, drops the disc in the end zone and ends up losing by 4.
Just cost AK like almost $1,000.
Right? About $1,000, yeah. And he was like a $40 wager with like that would have paid out almost $1,000. Just heartbreaking for him. That is bad beats. I was trying to find the clip actually so I could submit it to Scott Van Pelt for people who always I love. He does a weekly thing on SportsCenter where he does bad beats Monday nights. I thought it would be perfect for the show. Because now you can have these situations, right? Like, you can talk about these things where the spread comes into play and it becomes an issue here where there's people interested in what the final number is, right? Like, normally I wouldn't care if the final score of this game was, you know, it was a 3-point win or a 4-point win. Who cares for Minnesota? They won. That's all that mattered. Now it actually is interesting because you get to talk about the gambling aspect of it. So good for them.
I think
though,
that was also that also mattered for our picks contest.
It did matter for us because we went
3 for 3.
Woohoo! We're gonna talk more about that in a little bit, but yeah, I mean that's a big win for us right there.
Deep Look also went 3 for 3, so it didn't actually help us that much.
We picked all the same teams this week. I feel like they were pretty easy teams to pick this week. You know what I mean?
Raleigh Atlanta was not
okay,
an easy
fair.
One to pick.
That's true. Although I was all over that one this week. I didn't feel good about it for most of the game, but I was all over the money line on that game this week. Anyway, we're going to wrap this one up, and we're going to move now into our Canada Cup segment. We're going to have Theo Wan from the Hucking A podcast join us in just a second. So make sure you stick around. That'll be coming up momentarily.
The AUDL has gone green with VII Apparel. Every time you purchase a full sub jersey, which is made from VII Apparel's proprietary green line recycled material, they will plant a tree. Double up your environmental impact by joining VII Apparel and the AUDL in lowering our sport's carbon footprint. Sustainability is the ultimate goal here, folks. Head over to viiapparel.co to order your AUDL fan gear today. VII Apparel, the official jersey provider of the AUDL.
All right, welcome back everybody to Stall 7, and joining us now to break down all of these weekend's games from the Canada Cup and also just kind of give us a little bit more insight into everything happening north of the border for us here in the States. We have the host of Hucking A, Theo Wan, joining us to talk about all things Canada. Theo, how you doing?
First of all, a long-time listener, first-time caller, so do appreciate that on the podcast. But No, this is great. I love the content of the ABL. I remember listening to one of the episodes where Alex gave a shout out to me specifically. So do appreciate that. And yeah, AUDL season wrapping up over on the American side, but on the Canada side, it feels like it's kind of just getting started. We're kind of halfway through now, but so it's a little different in our lay of the land there.
Yeah, mid-season form right now for a lot of these teams. And, you know, just like we all expected, you know, the ordering of teams is Montreal, then Ottawa, then Toronto. So quite a bit of, I think, unexpected results that we've seen so far. Not if you ask some of the players involved, Jeremy Hill, when we had him on the show prior to the season, calling that Ottawa would win the Canada Cup. But just walk us through a little bit of a couple of the games that happened this weekend, and then we'll kind of start getting into some bigger picture things. First time we've had a Thursday night Ultimate game that I can remember in quite a while. Ottawa heading up to Montreal for this one.
Yeah, I actually like that concept because on weekends, obviously people got some other things on the go. So to have a game on Thursday is like kind of cool. And yeah, as you said, Ottawa going into Montreal and Montreal taking care of business, basically. Ottawa had a lot of turnovers. Nick Boucher was playing that game, and that'll be a theme that I'll mention in other games. But Ottawa had both Paul Renault and Nick Boucher back, but just too many turnovers on offense allowing Montreal to take the victory there. And it seems like they've kind of owned that matchup ever since they played the first time. So for those that don't know, Ottawa basically kind of destroyed Montreal the first time around. Montreal's D-line never got a single break, and Ottawa cruised the victory in Montreal and came out that weekend 2-0.
They finished 0-10 on break chances in that game, and that was Ottawa just scorched earth approach that weekend. Seriously lit the division on fire. Nobody was expecting, yeah, I think, them to go 2-0 that weekend. Montreal, though, this time they go 2-0. They get a chance to play Toronto on Saturday, and at this point, they knock the rush to 0-3 on the season. We're going to talk about Toronto a lot in this segment here because they are an anomaly and I can't figure out what's happening right now.
Yeah, for that game specifically, it was like at field level pretty hot down there, even at 6 p.m. Eastern when it was played. And there was no fans, so I know there have been fans in games across America for the AUDL, but there were no fans for this first game in Toronto. And so felt a little bit different being back at Varsity Stadium for Toronto, but just not having fans there. And yeah, Montreal, once again, keeping it close and then kind of pulling it out at the end where there was a turnover basically right near the Montreal end zone for Toronto that kind of sealed the deal there. But a lot of breaks back and forth for both teams and keeping it close. And yeah, for Montreal, I've been really impressed with them. They're obviously 4-1, but I think they're added extra basically month of practice compared to Toronto and Ottawa just with lockdown rules in Ontario compared to Quebec. That extra month, I feel like, is paying dividends for them. The fact that they played a tournament as a club in Quebec for a day was also probably helpful for them just to get some reps and experience. And so their offensive line is really flying. You saw in the AUDL honor roll, Vincent Lemieux getting a shout out, but Jacob Brissett's been tearing it up as a second-year player for them, but really getting a lot of minutes on the O-line and basically being their center handler, who's ambidextrous, by the way. So I've seen him throw like left-handed hucks from like the front of the end zone to the other side. So that's pretty amazing. So Montreal coming in 4-1 and they're feeling good. I don't want to call it right now on the podcast as a lock to make the final, but based on kind of how each team plays each other so many times, I feel like even if they were to lose out, I think they could probably make it, but I leave that to the statisticians to figure it out.
I don't know if we have any statisticians, I'll be honest, but prognosticators and people who like to take random guesses at things would definitely fit what Alex and I do.
I've gotten pretty good at figuring out the standings and the remaining schedule for the, figure out who is still alive and Boston needs to beat New York twice have Pittsburgh win this game. And that's how they could possibly maybe make the playoffs. They can't anymore, but yeah. I think Montreal has 4 wins. And they're only playing 8 games, right?
Yeah, Montreal has 3 games left, so the worst they could do is 4-4.
I think they're probably likely to finish at least in second place.
Oh, yeah. I think they seem to be in good shape. I mean, we would really need to see a pretty big turnaround here from Toronto for that to even really be in question at this point. And not to say that that's not possible, but we would need to see something the Rush have not really shown us all year so far. Before we move into this final game of the weekend, this is a little bit of a different kind of crew running the show in Montreal than what we've seen in recent years, right? I mean, Kevin Quinlan kind of was the, you know, the ringleader for them. Obviously, Quentin Bonnod in previous years putting up stellar numbers downfield. And even though, you know, Sasha Płaczkowski's back and he's been great for them, they really have kind of seemed to have tapped into some different playmakers that are now really running the show. Is this just a, well, it's been 2 years since we've seen these teams actually out on the field, so players have developed? Or have they kind of been able to tap in and find some new talent from other places here in Canada?
Yeah, well, both Jacob Brissett and Vincent Lemieux were on the U24 team. So Vincent Lemieux actually was part of the O-line as a handler for them with like Kinley G and Connor Armstrong, among others. And Malik Ojeda-Samar was also on that team. So I think getting experience in 2019 at the U24 level was important for them. And yeah, both, like you said, those players are stepping up. I feel like Montreal's hard to stop for the reason that they basically, and Coach Hayduke has said this, like they basically have like six handlers on their offensive line. So anyone can kind of go back and handle, and they can also work out in the lanes. And so having that versatility is hard to stop. And it just seems like another one player can beat you on one night. And as you mentioned, Kevin Quinlan's done a lot of the heavy lifting for Montreal in the past, but this year it seems like other players are contributing and it's leading to their success. Besides that first game where they looked not really great on defense, their team has looked a lot better than I would say both Ottawa and Toronto at this moment in time, at the time of this recording, right? Because things could change in a couple of weeks there.
Of course, of course. But yeah, so far, I mean, they really have looked pretty strong. And I think would have expected them to take a step back, especially without Quentin Bonnod. I mean, Bonnod led the league in goals in 2019. So for them to lose the league's top, you know, the top scoring player in the league and then still come out here and look like one of the best offenses. What you described, though, kind of reminds me. So they sound like the Canadian Raleigh Flyers, where they just throw out like six handlers and then you hope you figure it out, because they can, you know, you never know who's going to go off for the Flyers on a given night.
Or like hybrids, hybrids they call them.
Exactly.
Yeah,
so. Yes. No, I mean, that's what it is. That's right. These players that are capable of dominating the backfield space, but can go downfield and eat up chunks of yards as well. Let's talk about this final game of the weekend here, because this was a big one for Toronto. Toronto, we expected them, at least I did, expected them to kind of run through this Canada Cup setup without really much resistance. That's what they've done against the Canadian teams and even much of the AUDL prior to even really 2019, 2018. The East was their division. Nobody was ever going to knock them off. It was a huge upset when New York beat them in the playoffs in 2018. Now we're talking about Toronto getting their first win of the year in their fourth game, and it's a two-point win against Ottawa at home. First of all, talk me through this one. How did the Rush manage to bounce back, second game of back-to-back for them, where Ottawa's a bit more rested, having not played since Thursday?
I think speaking to some of the guys about that game, they were pretty fired up after their loss to Montreal. They're kind of shocked, right, because they were in that game throughout, and then a turnover right near their scoring end zone results in them losing the game, basically, and they're kind of in disbelief. And I think, them just getting a little bit fired up with the fans being there, I think that was really helpful, being in the stadium for that, seeing all the fans and just knowing that players' parents are there and family and friends. I think that just gave them a little extra motivation. For the Ottawa side, they were missing a few key players. So Nick Boucher was hurt, so he did not play that game, as well as Paul Renault and Alec Arsenault. So, I mean, those are three of their offensive line players that were missing. So they had to rely on some other contributors, which were able to contribute. But the scoreline makes it a little bit closer than it probably was, just because Ottawa kind of got a break at the end to kind of make it a little bit closer. But it seemed like it was Toronto's game kind of, when they got those breaks in the fourth and they're able to kind of take control, they kind of cruised on from there. But Toronto, much needed victory, and their work's not done. They go into Montreal this coming weekend, and if they can get a W there, I think that would really help them with their momentum. And then they got the weekend after that, they have a doubleheader back in Toronto with fans. So I think that if they can go and win those games, they'll be right back in it and potentially playing Montreal in the final. But Ottawa might have something to say about that. So
Ottawa, I feel like, certainly will have something to say about that, because as we've seen, Ottawa has looked probably the best that I can ever remember seeing the Outlaws look. I mean, already having two wins in five games is better than they do throughout most AUDL seasons at this point, unfortunately for them. And I'm not trying to just bash.
Yeah, it's not shade. It's not shade. You're just saying the truth. I get it.
No, I mean, this is like, I mean, sometimes I am throwing a bit of shade when we talk about Detroit on this show. But, you know, at the same time, it's also just factual that they haven't won a game since 2017. Do something about it, mechanics. But I want to talk about Toronto here because I've thrown out the idea on this show previously that it just really doesn't seem like they care a ton. It just seems like this team is treating this because it's the Canada Cup, because it's not part of the normal AUD or regular season, that they just really aren't that invested in the results that happen here. Now, obviously, you've talked to these players. You have a much better understanding than I do. This is mostly just me kind of being an observer from afar. What is wrong with Toronto? How is this team that has been so dominant in the AUDL for so many years now, 1-3 playing against all Canadian competition, somewhere where they've dominated in the past?
Yeah, I knew this question was coming. So it's definitely a good question and one that people definitely want answers for. And I think it kind of starts with the pandemic here in Ontario, just not being able to practice in the same way. So Quebec had a little bit more practice time, as I mentioned, but even in 2020, not just 2021. And so for some of these guys having not played in basically 2 years, that I think affects them a little bit in terms of their cardio shape and things like that. And I'm sure some of them would say, you know, some of them are in their best shape of their lives and some of them are still working towards that. And I think also having a bunch of the veteran players missing. So Toronto's having to rely on young up and comers, young players, and that's good, but it could also lead to some speed bumps along the way. So Thompson McKnight finally came back and played, but Jeff Bomber Powell hasn't played a game. Isaiah Mastakelli hasn't played a game. So when you're missing kind of those stalwarts of the Toronto system and the Toronto scene, even just their presence on the field, I feel like when Thompson McKnight was on the O-line this past weekend, he actually was cutting. So that's kind of a fun fact for you. So they wanted to keep the same handler core of Luke Comire, Nathan Hurst, and Jason Huynh together. So if you watch the game, McKnight does start a lot of the times in the lanes. And then sometimes he comes back and handles, but he was kind of in the lanes for a bit. So just having him back, a veteran presence there, Ian McKenzie was back for the first time. So having some of those players back, I think, helped them. In terms of what's wrong, I don't think that they don't necessarily not care, but I think they maybe underestimated some of the competition. So Ottawa came in when they played, Toronto came in on the road. I think Ottawa just slapped them in the mouth, truthfully, with their offensive prowess. If you watch that game, just their Ottawa's O-line was just humming like Hucks for days, and they were able just to kind of shock the Toronto defense there. And I think that really just kind of took them aback, like, because they haven't lost to Ottawa like at all, and that was their first ever loss, and that was the first game of the Canada Cup. So I think that really punched them in the mouth and gave them some extra motivation. In what I've seen, I think Toronto is continuing to possibly trend up, whereas Ottawa's been actually trending down ever since their 2-0 start. Like, they've not looked like the same team, and having Nick Boucher hurt is probably a part of that. So it'll be interesting to see. They play each other a few more times, Toronto and Ottawa. So one more in Ottawa and then one more in Toronto. So those games will be definitely big to watch out for, because as we said, Montreal is probably in the final regardless of what happens now.
Sure. Theo, I think it seems like every week we're seeing a new name from Canada emerge onto the league honor roll. And, you know, we're not maybe players who fans in the States aren't as familiar with. A few weeks ago, we put together our all-star rosters. And at that point, the Canadian teams hadn't played yet.
Okay.
If you're going to select an all-star or two from each of the Canadian teams, who would be on your ballot so far?
Ooh, I didn't even prep for this question, but I like it. In terms of for Ottawa, I would say they've had a couple players stand out. One person I'll give a shout out to that probably won't see a lot of the stat sheet, but has done a great job defensively, is Brandon Adibe. He actually has played Ultimate, I think, for a year. Played on like the College B team in Ottawa at Carleton University, and has basically started or played every game for them since. And I remember before the season, we were talking about him, and he was someone that was an unknown, but Alec Arsenault has played really well. But I'm going to give actually the nod to Jeff Bevan, their handler, who's kind of stepped in lieu of Nick Boucher at times. And so I think he just has been a calming presence for them on offense. He had a lot of points in the game against Toronto in a losing effort. So someone that people probably have not heard about in the same way as Nick Boucher or Alec Arsenault. So can I choose all-stars that people might not know? Is that work? Is that like a better thing?
It's whatever players you think are playing at all-star level.
Brett Holzmeier should still be an all-star. I'm still 100%. Mad about it. Sorry.
100%. Anyway, no, Bevan had like six assists in just the game against Toronto last week. Like that's
Yeah. I mean, these guys are putting up. I finish this, and then I have a separate question.
Yeah, that's fine.
Something else that stems from this, and then we'll wrap this thing up. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'll have to look at his stats, but Jakob Brisset for Montreal has been tearing it up from the handler space. I know he was someone that was on the honor roll, I believe, last week, not like this past week. Yeah. Is that correct?
I think you're right.
He was mentioned by name. I don't know if he was on the honor roll, but he was definitely – his name was still in there. I don't know if
he was – I think he was mentioned in
the edge stats, right?
Entry. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, the edge stats too. Yeah, he's had a great year from that perspective.
Yeah, 20 assists. I'm just looking at stats now. 20 assists, 5 goals, 4 blocks, almost 2,000 throwing yards. And it's not just the stats. I feel like he's just someone who's quarterbacking the offense a lot. So he gets the disc centered to him, and he's doing a great job with it. So he's someone that people might not know, but he made the 2019 U24 team as, like, I think, like a 20-year-old or someone pretty young in the system at the time, because he made the U20 team that would have happened in 2020. So definitely someone to watch out for. I would say he's probably someone that Montreal definitely wants to build their offense around. And then for Toronto, a D-line player that just had an absolutely phenomenal weekend, and that's number 34, Phil Turner. So he had 4 blocks against Montreal. He was matched up against Malik Ojemudia, and they threw to Malik, I think, 3 times straight, like kind of within like a sequence of a few points. And Phil got like block on him like 3 times, and then he foot blocked him, and it was just pretty amazing to see. And Phil actually just got named to the World Games applicant pool for Canada. So he's getting some more recognition now as someone that could potentially, I don't know if he'll make the World Games team. We're going to do our predictions on the Hockey Game podcast at some point, but he's someone that is definitely up and coming in the Toronto scene as a defensive player, just a big bodied athlete that can control his body well and just has big time blocks for them. So I want to pick a few players that people in the States might not know, and they can get a little bit of a shout out there.
For sure. Phil Turner had 4 blocks in each game this weekend. For comparison, the Los Angeles Aviators as a team also had 4 blocks this weekend.
There you go.
Oof, it's not great. It's not how you want to see it for the team there. Also,
I call him Phil the Thrill, but yeah.
He's certainly living up to that nickname, because Phil Turner so far, you want to take out anybody who's played only 1 game this season. He's only played in 4, but he actually leads the league in blocks per game as of right now. He's ahead of Drew Swanson and Brett Holzmeier. So
there you go.
Definitely making a big impact on the defensive side of the disc. That's actually what I want to talk to you about, though, because I feel like it started to kind of recede to the mean a little bit, right? We're starting to see some more normal scores. But right out of the gate, we were seeing some ridiculous offensive numbers from teams all across Canada. I mean, the opening weekend for Ottawa, as we touched on earlier, where they were just, they might have scored 40 against Detroit in a game. That's the way they were playing.
Shade on Detroit again. I like it.
Yeah, sorry.
Somebody else
goes winless, then we can talk about them instead.
In there, but yeah. No one's winless in Canada, so there you go.
I know, which is a surprise, I think. I would have expected somebody to be at this stage, considering there's only 3 teams playing. Anyway, I really want to know, what is the deal at this point? Because I feel like we have seen way less defense than I would have expected. It's starting to, like I said, start to show up a little bit. But, like, Montreal starts out the season, goes 0-10 on break chances. Like, teams are putting up 26, 27 points in a game. For a game where we kind of expected, they might be a little rusty coming in, they haven't had a whole lot of lead time to practice kind of coming into this, we've seen the offenses play a lot better than we would have expected.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because I feel like that might just be a case of like some cardio aspects of like the defense just on the larger field of them just not being able to keep up. But as we're seeing, the scores are kind of going back to the mean, as you mentioned. So I know 18-16, kind of like a little bit lower scoring games. And I would say that's probably what Montreal wants to kind of grind it out. And same thing with Ottawa. I feel like Toronto might want to jack up the scoring just be hucking, but if you're Ottawa and Montreal kind of want to grind it out, I know Nick Boucher, I talked about it yesterday, and one of their keys was to potentially just like grind out points and make Toronto really work it laterally and just a lot of passes. So yeah, I think the offenses are coming back, as you mentioned, from the top, but defenses are starting to make it happen. So I think you might still see some of these lower scoring games. And obviously Montreal, their D-line has been humming because they've actually punched in a lot more break chances. And so that first game probably knocking off some rust for them as well. So yeah, we'll see what happens. I'm pretty excited to see who makes it to the final, because everyone, I know you two did, thought it was going to be Toronto, Montreal, like for sure. Charlie had talked about, I know the Ottawa uses that audio from myself when I apologize, not apologize, but said I was wrong. And they used the audio from Charlie when Charlie said Ottawa wasn't very good. And so they use that as fuel. I know that for a fact. They've clipped it out, put it in the group chat, and they're using that as fuel. So maybe that can fuel them to the final there.
I just want to say,
we're providing some bulletin board material to somebody.
We knew Ottawa was going to be good. We picked them in that game against Toronto in week one of the Canada Cup.
Did you actually?
Hang on. We picked them to cover by five and a half. We expected them to lose by fewer than six goals, not win outright.
Just saying, we did have some credit here.
That is very true.
And yeah, we had Jeremy Hill on. He predicted the Outlaws were going to win the Canada Cup, and that's still in play.
It is still in play.
It could happen.
Certainly possible. So. Yeah. A lot of games left to play in Canada. He is Theo Juan, host of the Hucking A podcast. You can check it out every week as part of UltiWorld's network of podcasts. Theo, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it. And look forward to seeing how the rest of the games shake out in Canada.
Yeah, thanks for having me. For those American fans, definitely tune in to Canada Cup. Pretty exciting stuff. Each game's like a new chapter, to be honest. Because even though it's the same teams playing, it's like, there's different stakes at hand and different storylines for each game. So definitely tune in. Thanks again, Stall 7. Yeah, like I said, longtime listener, first time caller. So thanks for having me.
All right, welcome back to Stall 7, everybody. Thanks as always to Theo Juan. Tons of fun stuff. We're going to dive into our picks contest for this week. As Alex talked about earlier, we went 3-for-3 this past week. Unfortunately, we also didn't gain any ground on Deep Look, so we're still 2 picks back of them.
We're heading into the final week, actually. We got to be perfect. Damn. And they have to go 0-for-3. So caveat here, I know they didn't like it when we changed our pick a few weeks ago, but for the sake of making this competitive, we're going to put our picks out here for what we think we would pick, but I think we might just have to wait till Deep Looks makes their picks and then go the opposite.
And then just go opposite of that? Yeah.
Otherwise, we have zero chance of winning.
Yeah, you're right. Maybe do we also want to see maybe if the DC New York games get rescheduled? Maybe we add that on as a week 13 pick'em contest.
Oh wow. We'll have to talk. We'll figure that
one out. That'll be a further conversation. I'm sure they won't want to, because they'll just feel like, cool, you guys have to deal with Pavel now. They'll probably be like, nope, you guys get Pavel. Good luck with that. Just looking more and more likely at this point. We're not a good luck for us, Alex. We're struggling right now.
Just remember, New York was on defense with 36 seconds left, down by 2, and they won that game. Anything's possible. True. Let me rephrase that. Minnesota was on defense with 1 second left, down by 1, back in week 1, and they won that game.
And they covered
for our picks contest, so anything's possible.
Unreal. Right.
Games we're picking this week. Raleigh is a pick'em at DC. Madison is a 2.5-point underdog on the road in Minnesota. And San Jose, a 3.5-point underdog in San Diego.
Yeah, this...
Can we start with that West game? It's San Diego.
Yeah, we could start with the West and the Central. It's San Diego and Minnesota.
Great, done. That was easy.
Yeah, I mean, I am not really sure that I see. Madison has nothing to play for. Neither does Minnesota, for that matter, though. I mean, they've clinched a playoff spot. And I feel
like that's pride between these two teams.
Oh, yes, absolutely. There is some pride there. I don't think San Diego cares whatsoever. That's a season series, right? Yes, I believe so. I think you were correct in that one.
The rubber match in that one. Mm-hmm. San Diego probably cares a little bit less than San Jose.
I take that back. Minnesota has everything to play for here.
Oh, because if they win and Chicago loses, they could host the playoff game.
Okay, now, never mind.
Yeah.
Never mind. Right. Chicago is definitely beating Detroit. But, I mean, there is the, you know, slimmest of all slim chances here that this matters a little bit, right?
I mean, maybe? No, not really. You definitely have to treat it as if it matters. At the worst case, it's a playoff tune-up, because Madison's defense is going to give you a hard time, just like Chicago's will. So, I think Minnesota plays this straight up. cannot
Minnesota
imagine.
Minnesota will know the result of the Chicago. Chicago plays on Saturday, and then Minnesota plays on Sunday. So they will know the result already.
All right, so that's interesting. That changes it a little bit. I still think Minnesota wins by at least three.
By at least three is where I start to then...
I think they want the
momentum.
Honestly,
the thing I think, too, that maybe we talk about here, when was the last time we saw Madison play a game?
It's been a while.
Right? They didn't play in Week 11. I'll double check. I don't know that they played in Week 10 either, for that matter.
No, I think they had two bye weeks. Their last game, their most recent
their last
game
was Week 9.
July 31st.
It's been a little bit. You know,
it'll be 23 days between games for them.
Yeah, like I think that might be the difference maker here. While I'm sure Madison is very well rested at this stage, that's a pretty big gap to go in between playing games. So Minnesota, meanwhile, has been kind of in the, you know, in their normal schedule at this point.
Yeah, I think that's another point there in favor of Minnesota. That being said, Madison has 3 weeks to plan for this game. You know, maybe their coaching staff is pulling something together. I feel pretty comfortable also to saying we'll take the opposite of what Deeplick does from that game.
Maybe, yeah. But I also think Minnesota wins this one. I think I would expect them to cover maybe ever so slightly. It's gonna be tight. Minnesota has not looked great in recent weeks. They've played some close games with Indy. They've had some sloppy offensive games. Recently they got beat by Chicago a couple weeks back. So I'd love to see them really tighten things up here and look like a, you know, championship capable team. There is a chance that we see Minnesota go to championship weekend, right? I mean, they're 9-2 right now, could potentially finish out the regular season at 10-2.
Yeah, they're definitely the least talked about 9-2 team, or two loss or fewer team in the league right now.
Definitely. No question about it. So Winchill, I think, have a good shot at winning this one. Let's say that they cover. I think they will. Like I said, I think Madison might have a little bit of rust to knock off in those early stages if they're not playing.
Or, I mean, how many of their players have like already mentally moved on to the club season?
I don't know. I mean, Madison is a city where I feel like AUDL takes precedent, you know,
over club in a lot of different ways. I do. Yeah, that's fair.
They actually didn't have conflict because the Radicals were off for U.S. Open weekend when Yogis Bo went out to play at U.S. Open, but... Right.
We've seen Mad Men also. I think they played at Heavyweights at some point in there. That might not be.
Yes.
I might be conflating the team in the tournament, but Mad Men definitely played in a tournament. Heavyweights definitely.
That's right. Yeah, I'm not entirely sure. But the point is that, yes, I'm not super shocked. I think Madison will prioritize the AUDL most of the time. I just do wonder a little bit about, you know, it doesn't really mean anything for Madison at this point. They got nothing really to play for other than pride, which I know that they play for quite a bit, right? That's when they absolutely will wear on their sleeve. They love to beat the other Central Division teams, but I just think Minnesota's got a little bit more to play for, and they're probably going to be a little bit sharper coming into this one.
Sure.
All right, well, let's talk about this last game here, because this is tricky. Raleigh at DC. Raleigh, I didn't feel great about the pick for most of the game. Pulled it out in the end, thankfully, but, you know, DC, I don't know. I mean, this is a really interesting matchup. The last time we saw these two teams play... was Week 2, and DC narrowly won on the road. Now DC's at home. Gosh, I don't know. Alex, where are you leading on this one?
It's a tough one for sure. I'm not sure I have an easy answer. When was the last time that we saw DC get challenged? All right, they've played Pittsburgh, Philadelphia. Oh, okay. So last time DC had a hard game was July 17th. They lost to Atlanta 17-13. And since then, they've beat up on Philadelphia and Pittsburgh.
Yeah. And then didn't get a chance to play the Cannons. But not that, I don't know.
That
they would have.
That game, by the way, is rescheduled on the schedule for Saturday the 28th in Tampa Bay.
Really?
That's what the league website says right now.
Interesting. Wait, how do you see that?
Because I clicked on the DC pre-schedule.
Okay, that makes more sense, because the league schedule only goes to 12 weeks, so a little confused by that. I wonder...
Well, I presume the Atlantic Division playoff games will be the week afterwards.
You would have to think at this point.
And which I also think gives space for New York and Boston.
New York and Boston, I would assume that
week 13 in the fixed contest. I'm a text Riley right now.
Oh yeah, we should absolutely have a week 13 picks contest. Yeah, it's on New York's schedule as well. It's currently listed as TBD in terms of location, but I think that's just a they'll end up playing that at Hormel Stadium. Boston is the home team. It's a noon game right now for Sunday the 29th, as of right now for Boston, New York. All right, that's good to know. Good to know. So there's a lot to play for now in the unexpected week 13 of the AUDL season. The more you know.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because the league built like a fairly flexible schedule to account for potential COVID cancellations,
Yeah,
and
you're right.
like we'll see if this game counts as that. I don't know with how much Rokas tweets hold up,
True.
but we haven't had a game canceled because of a COVID outbreak yet this season,
That's
and
true. We've had a couple players that have not been able to travel because of exposure, other things like that. But for the most part,
but
it's really
like,
not been. It's been like a non-factor in the league season.
and I don't think we like think back to like May, right before the season started, we were, like last NFL season had a lot of games canceled. Last Major League Baseball season had
Oh
a lot
yeah.
of games canceled or
Right.
postponed or whatever. Like none of that happened this year. And props to the league and their medical team and, and every team's athletic care network for, helping make that happen. Obviously for the players who are making good choices and being safe as much as they can.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's been the biggest non-story, I guess, of the year, right? You would think that this was going to play a major role in determining a lot of things. And I don't think there's definitely it's still been there, but more as like a backdrop to anything than really the main headline, which is a good thing. It's been a really nice change of pace and probably not what we would have expected at this stage. All right, let's make this final pick here, Alex, because we need to make something at least on the air, and then we'll revisit it.
I'm Team
I'm gonna go
Flyers.
with Raleigh. I think Raleigh,
Great.
they've come in. They haven't looked super great, but they obviously are finding new ways to win. They've been battle tested the last three games. They've won. Their point differential in their last three games is plus one. They beat Boston by one, lost to New York by one. Actually, they're plus two, excuse me, and then beat Atlanta by two. So I mean, they've been playing some really close games. I expect that's what this will be here. And I think they'll have some revenge on their mind as well. And DC, like you said, haven't really had a chance to get tested in quite a while. Not really had anybody come in and challenge them. And we've seen they're not exactly unbeatable at home. Atlanta went in there and beat them pretty soundly back in July. So that'll be a really fun game to watch. I imagine that's got to be the game of the week this week, right? That has to be it. I assume that'll be what we get to watch on Saturday, and then in Fox Sports 2 replays on Wednesday. All right, I'm gonna give a quick survivor pool update here. Six out of our final seven entries move on because somebody picked Pittsburgh, and I cannot understand why. Now, I get it. You're down towards the
Y'all.
end of the season. It's hard, right? Because you're starting to run out of teams. I look through. This person already used the Empire, had already used the Glory, had already used the Growlers, had already used Minnesota, and a lot of the top teams for the league. However, I look back and check this. San Jose was sitting right there playing in a game that they were favored to win by 4.5 points. And
At home.
instead, he picked the Pittsburgh Thunderbirds to go on the road and beat Boston, which obviously did not happen. And so that person is now out of the pool. We also had three people who picked the DC Breeze. I think the plan, Alex, we'll talk about this a little bit on the show because I think this is pretty interesting. I think the plan is just to move those people through. Right, we'll push them through into
I think we
week
have to.
12.
That's the precedent that we set from,
Right,
Dallas and
Dallas.
Austin's cancellation in week one.
Now, with only six teams left, if let's say all six of those entries survive into the final week, do we want to wait and see what the result of that DC Tampa Bay game is? We expect it to be a win. So, do
I
you want
can't
to wait?
imagine DC losing to a
Good point.
conglomeration of thrown together players wearing Canons jerseys.
All right, good point. Good point. All right, so maybe this isn't really all that relevant, but we do have the
But
tiebreaker to
yes,
defend.
if Tampa Bay does somehow win that game, I could see the justification for cutting them out.
Right. Yeah, for having a tie-breaking difference there, because we will have. I mean,
Right.
I
We'll have
don't
at
know who's
least.
everybody's going to pick in week 12, but we're going to have six players going into the final, week of this contest. At this point, we do have a tiebreaker in effect. I don't know if you even remember this. It's
Yeah, the Pavlyanis assist total,
Yes,
right?
you had to try and guess what Pavlyanis' assist total for the season would be. Price is Right style, as close as you can get without going over.
Yep, he's at 45 right now. entering the final week against Detroit.
One last week to play against Detroit here. So could theoretically put up like 6 or 7 more. Definitely.
Or he could put up like 3 because the D-line's going to play the whole game.
Good point. Good point. So it'll be interesting to see. So, but I have to double check the totals there. There's a couple people who are like pretty close together. Like a bunch of people who pick like low 60s, a couple people like high 50s. So I have to look and see what the exact one was. One person I think might have picked 48. So they will be sweated out this weekend, I'm pretty sure. So there's going to be a lot to keep track of this weekend in our Survivor Pool contest. And remember, the UltiWorld prize pack on the line here. Very excited to see what that looks like too, because I want to see what that merchandise comes out to be. All right, Alex, that's going to pretty much do it for the show.
Yeah, we're shaping up for a final week. And, you know, what's great, we're entering week 12 and we still have games that matter, right? I think all the playoff teams have been decided.
A bunch of them.
But I'm really excited, looking forward to some of these seeding games and gearing up for like a while. You know, if this Raleigh-Atlanta game is any indication, like these playoffs are going to be nuts to watch. I'm really excited for that.
Yeah, Raleigh-DC this weekend. New York-Boston, too. I mean, like there are a lot of implications for seeding of who's going to be at home, who's going to be on the road.
Yep.
Fun fact, the Detroit Mechanics are playing in a meaningful game this weekend. Now, it's not meaningful for them, kind of. I mean, this is their last chance to beat the streak this year. Alex, your T-shirt might be coming in very soon.
I'm ready for it. I do have breaking news here. Charlie and Keith agreed to extend our picks contest to week 13.
Woo! Let's go. All right, picks contest week 13.
We don't have to go perfect this week, but we should hopefully get a little closer than we are right now because there are only 2 games on the schedule for week 13, so we have to beat them by at least 1 to have a chance.
Right. Yeah, we need to pick up one here. I have to say, though, I think they might end up picking the same 3 that we currently have picked.
We'll talk that through. We will make it public if we decide to change any
let
picks.
Let everybody know.
That's going to do it for our show today. Don't forget to hit us up on social media at Stall7. We love interacting with y'all. Send us questions for, you know, we got Brian Jones still coming on the show for Coach's Corner. Always love when we're able to add some reader submitted questions. Otherwise, we're just nerding out ourselves, and that's fun and all. But we like it when
we're capable of doing so. Don't worry.
Yeah.
But it's always nice to hear from you guys. And as always, make sure you rate, review, subscribe to the show. Honest 5-star reviews, of course. And feel free to share it with friends on social media. That's how this stuff gets out there. And we really appreciate you guys for listening. You know, it's been a really fun season. We got couple of great weeks left, hopefully. That's going to do it for this episode, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in, and you guys will hear from us again next week.